Listen to the voices of our world.
Life is it's a daily struggle for survival.
Supporting the troops is more than that magnetic bumper sticker on your car.
Now, throughout Iraq, there's between 60 and 70% unemployment. And part of this is because contracts went to American companies instead of Iraqi companies.
The coffins and the wounded are a perfect example of how the White House has really hidden the human cost of this war.
Welcome to Voices of Our World, a presentation of this station and Maryknoll. Sitting in today for Eileen Bott, I'm your host, Howard Schwartz. One thing almost every one of us can agree on, war must be reserved as an action of last resort. We all want to believe that our elected leaders would never consider risking the lives of our young men and women, or the lives of citizens of any other nation for that matter, for reasons that are less than grave and urgent. Despite the camouflage of fluffy junk news on runaway brides, we've slowly absorbed the knowledge that those original rationales we were fed on Iraq may well have been subterfuge. Much more unacceptable than being duped in the name of patriotism, 2 years into this war, 1,622 of our soldiers are dead. We'll talk today with U.S. Army First Lieutenant and founder of veterans advocacy group Operation Truth, Paul Rykoff, and with a U.S. citizen with roots in Iraq, Dr. Dalia Wasfi.
Rolling in a bag and wondering how it got this far. Just another poor boy out to fight a rich man's war.
A fairly boring business trip was over, and Kathy Golden was on her way home to New York. She noticed her plane had been idling an unusually long time on the tarmac, and then the pilot announced there was in fact a problem with the computerized guidance system. Trying desperately to find reasons why her cup could still be viewed as half full, Kathy reminded herself that at least she had the aisle completely to herself. But then she felt a very benign tapping on her shoulder and tried not to acknowledge it. The tapping resumed with a little more insistence, and now she had to turn around. Well, behind her sat a 19-year-old U.S. Army private who admitted to Kathy, takeoffs made him nervous. Could he sit with her? What could she say? So for the next hour and a half, Kathy got to know Private Daniel Armstrong. He was about to spend a few weeks with his mom, his girlfriend, and his Labrador Retriever before shipping out to Iraq. Kathy would never ask Daniel what he believed about the war, but if planes made this young man nervous, he would need all his resolve for what lay ahead. Now, we've known for months from all official reports there were no weapons of mass destruction. In early May, a highly classified British government memo was leaked stating that 8 months prior to the war, intelligence and facts were being fixed around policy to justify the premeditated invasion of Iraq. The number of our soldiers dying in Iraq will not remain at 1,622. It rises daily, with the number of wounded, currently 11,888. Some in the Pentagon feel that we went to war with half the number of troops needed to seal borders and maintain order. And as one honest National Guard specialist, Thomas Wilson, explained to a rough old Donald Rumsfeld, lack of proper armor has caused soldiers to scavenge for scrap that they call hillbilly armor. As the U.S. deficit soars with an additional $82 billion approved for the war, auditors say $89.4 million can't be sufficiently accounted for, with another $8 million just plain lost. The Defense Department is looking to close quite a list of military bases and veterans' hospitals, and recruiting has become so disastrous that a one-day suspension was called for on May 20th. Paul Rykoff's father served in Vietnam, and his granddad fought in World War II, so he wanted to carry on the tradition of giving back to his country. Returned from Iraq and still serving in the New York Army National Guard, Paul founded a veterans' advocacy group, Operation Truth. Kathy Golden talks with Paul Rykoff.
You just got back yourself from Iraq about a year ago, correct?
That's correct. About spring of last year, I got back after serving for just under a year in Baghdad with the U.S. Army.
Paul, can you tell me a little bit about why so quickly after you returned you formed Operation Truth?
Sure. Mainly because there was a void. When I got back from Iraq, I figured there would be other veterans groups and other people talking about the issues surrounding our war and how it affected us and our families, and there really wasn't. So I bound together with a few other vets who were concerned about the way things were going, and we founded Operation Truth, which is now the largest Iraq veterans group in America. It was also the first, and we're a nonprofit, nonpartisan veterans advocacy group that is really trying to take care of its own. We feel like the American public is largely detached from this war, and we want to inform them as to what's going on over there and then also give them action items so they can get involved and affect legislation and affect nonprofit organizations that are doing good things. Because supporting the troops is more than that magnetic bumper sticker on your car. We need folks to get involved and understand the issues surrounding the veterans' hospitals, body armor, the way our families are treated, and, you know, a multitude of other issues that are really wrapped up in this war. And there's a real, I think, dangerous detachment that's going on now between the military and the civilians, and we're trying to bridge that gap and bring those people closer together so they can better understand each other.
Now, I know, Paul, that you've tried to remain very nonpartisan, and I'm sure that isn't always easy. You mentioned even on the website that in the advocacy work, you try to find out in advance about an operation that's coming up, and you point out shortcomings and stuff. How do you get access to that information?
Well, I mean, we have the best sources in the world, and those are the folks in Iraq and the ones who've recently come back. So we are a nonpartisan organization, and we're trying to focus on policy issues. We're often at odds with the White House and with President Bush, but it's not because he's a Republican. It's because he's the president. If George Washington himself were in the same situation, we'd have to hold his feet to the fire and also hold the Democrats to the fire. Everybody in Washington is responsible for this war and responsible for making sure that it's fought logically and sensibly and with all the resources at our country's disposal and that the American public's informed as to what's going on. So it's a tough fight, and we are often slammed by both sides, and I think that's a sign that we're probably on the right track. And a lot of people are interested in trying to make lemonade out of the lemons that we've been dealt.
Are you accidentally on anybody's enemy list?
I probably am on someone's list. My brother jokingly says all the time that I'm in more danger now than I was in Baghdad. But our numbers are growing rapidly. We've got over 400 veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan who have joined Operation Truth. The website, OperationTruth.com, thousands of people go to it every day. And we've got over 30,000 online activists who have registered on our site and are supporting us. So I think we've got a lot of backup, and we're telling the truth. And I think the truth will be on our side, and history will be on our side.
Now, flying in the face of presenting the public with the truth, they have, in a sense, no choice but to be detached. If we are not allowed to show coffins coming in at Dover, and also 25,000 troops coming back injured have been brought here at night deliberately. How do you circumvent that? They're trying to not allow the American public to see this.
Well, I think you're exactly right. The battle for activism in this generation is really one that involves the media. And the White House has been brilliant in their control of the media. They control access. So when they control access, they essentially control the story. Everybody in the media has got to play ball with the Pentagon or with the White House or with the Army if they want a story. But the coffins and the wounded are a perfect example of how the White House has really hidden the human cost of this war. There's been a tremendous human cost. And anybody who tries to bring visibility to that human cost or honor that sacrifice is often labeled as anti-war. And I would argue exactly the opposite. In order to properly honor the sacrifices of those people who've died and who've been wounded, we need to know who they are. We need to hear their story. We really need to dig down and understand how these people are affected, how their families are affected, and also how the general public is going to be affected. We're already seeing homeless vets. We've already seen folks who are having problems with their marriages and with their jobs. There are ripple effects when you send people off to war.
I think that people are vaguely aware that we didn't send our guys off with everything they needed, and we're not taking care of them on the other end either when they come back. But how do we make that more known to the American public?
Well, that's the core of our mission. We're trying to really empower veterans, get them in the media. So when people are watching a major news network, you've got a talking head from an institute in Washington, and you've got some policy wonk, and you've got a news anchor. But how about having a soldier there? How about having a veteran of this war who's actually been on the ground and not sitting behind an air-conditioned desk in Washington? People do have to seek out alternate news sources, look for the veterans' voices. I think those are really important in shaking this country awake, and also I think that's a critical role that veterans have to play in the next few years, is helping America to understand the war in Iraq. It's not Vietnam, it's not World War II, and it's a very different conflict.
In terms of differences in the various different wars, how do you see the difference in the post-traumatic stress for the current group of people coming back in that, to a large degree, the enemy they fought was rarely a fellow soldier?
Right. Well, what we've seen with the mental and psychological toll is that it's tremendous. And I think it's also another untold story about this war. New England Journal of Medicine recently did a study that found that roughly 1 in 6 soldiers are coming back from Iraq with PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder. That's a huge number. Many people have faced extended tours and demanding situations in an urban environment. All these factors go into a soup that makes for a really, really bad mental health situation. And in the same way, the White House and the Pentagon did not prepare for the insurgency and did not prepare for enough body armor, they haven't prepared for enough psychological counselors. They haven't prepared the VA for the looming wave of folks who are coming back from Iraq. Over 1 million people have gone through Iraq at this point, and the VA is still underfunded by close to $1 billion. We're closing VA hospitals in a time of war, and that's something that most people don't know about, but they should be finding out more about it, and they should be shocked to hear these things are happening.
These guys aren't getting the care they desperately need, and some of them, as you pointed out, are winding up on the street. How does that happen?
Well, I think there's a real hole in the system, and that hole exists when they come off of the Department of Defense, the Pentagon's payrolls, and they transition back into civilian life. We spend, you know, thousands of dollars and many months getting them ready to go to war, but we spend only a few days getting them ready to come home. So you could be literally in Baghdad 1 week and in Brooklyn the next, and without transitional services, without proper counseling, without proper evaluation, without proper job placement, these folks are facing a very, very tough uphill battle. You can't just put the uniform on the shelf and go back to work at Walmart. You need some help. And I think that that's really where this country has dropped the ball and hasn't learned enough about its mistakes from Vietnam. We've already seen homeless vets in New York and around the country, and they're also going to be a drain on your resources. They're going to affect your police department, your schools, from a financial standpoint as well. And it's either pay now or pay later, and I think we're still at a point where we can make a difference.
We're still at a crossroads when it comes to trials and tribunals coming up after World War II. The Nuremberg trials at least assigned blame from the top down, and we're going at it the other way. We're going from the bottom up. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think that's another really, really problematic way that this war has been run. You know, we recently had a major congressional investigation on the steroid issue. You got Sammy Sosa and Mark McGuire testifying before Congress, but we've yet to have that type of inquiry into the contractors in Iraq or to why we didn't have the right body armor or why we didn't have the right equipment or really what happened at Abu Ghraib. It's really passing the buck, and the fact that lower-level enlisted soldiers have continuously been the focus of the reprimands, I think, is problematic because, you know, I learned in the military there's something called a command climate. Whoever's in charge creates a climate that dictates the behavior of the people in the unit, and that commander is responsible. You know, these soldiers have been held accountable, as well they should, but you also have to think about who put them in that place, who funded them, who trained them, who instructed them, who ordered them to create a situation that often has led to them being set up for failure rather than success. Abu Ghraib is a perfect example. The commanders do have a role, and they should be held accountable.
Consensus-wise, when these guys come back and talk to you, do they feel they know why they went, or are they confused?
Well, the real reason why most of them went is because they had to. They signed a contract, and this is what they agreed to do. And the politics aren't always important to troops. They're going over there because it's their job, and it's what our country has asked them to do. You know, all the politics goes out the window when you're in harm's way, and it's just about survival.
Out of the mouths of the vets themselves, Paul, what is their main issue? What is their main complaint?
I think they feel like the country's detached. I think that's a tremendous issue for most folks. When they come home, they feel like this country is living their life uninterrupted, and most people are. So I think they just want a level of understanding. They want to be heard. They've got their own set of issues that need to be addressed, and they want to be involved in the conversation. So I think that is their biggest issue. But I think they're really galvanizing now and moving toward it, and Operation Truth is proud to be a part of it.
Thank you so much for being with us today, Paul Rykoff of OperationTruth.com. Please come back on the show.
I'd be happy to. Thank you very much, man.
Were we right to invade Iraq? We want to know what you think. Email us. Go to www.marynowell.org/voices. Just click on Contact Us, or you can call us at 1-877-MARYNOWELL. That's 1-877-MARYKNOLL. You're listening to Voices of Our World.